everybody, and welcome to our first episode of Climate Talk Uganda in 2025. This is the accessible, acronym-free podcast about all things climate. My name is Josephine Karunji, and I'm in the studio with William Sechiranda. William,
yes,
Happy
please.
New Year.
Happy New Year, JK, and Happy New Year to everyone that's listening to this podcast.
How are you feeling about 2025 so far?
2025, good. It's nice. It has begun in power. Yes.
Do you have any big goals, that you've set for yourself?
Yes, I have several goals. And one of them is to save some money, more money, at least 30%. Yes, what I've been saving. And enjoy myself, my family, and add on the skills, you know, studying, buying equipment.
Go big or go home. You're buying more equipment for...
More equipment for my job.
Okay.
That I'm doing.
For video...
Yeah, video, pictures, lights, okay. And so on and so forth.
You're going back to school?
Yeah, I want to go back to school. Online classes, definitely.
What do you want to study?
I want to study media stuff. Basically, I can't go into details.
Okay.
Yes.
What do you know about electric vehicles, William?
Electric vehicles?
Yeah.
I know, of course, I know one company that does that in Uganda.
Who?
Chira EV.
Okay. Have you been in that bus? Is it Kayola bus?
Kayola bus. Mm-hmm. I sit online and I have actually a friend. I play with him at church, and they are the one that does that. It's called Matovu Fred.
So you've never been on the bus?
I've never been inside that bus.
Okay. Have you been on an electric bike?
Electric bike? No, but I also watch it on the roads.
Would you like an electric motorcycle?
It's actually nice because it doesn't produce noise. Just that it's silence in Uganda. It's especially in Kampala. It's so noisy, so it can get where you are unknowingly, and if the rider is bad, it can just knock you down. Because for us, we are used of hooting and everything. We are used of these ones that hoot a lot. Yeah, but the mere look at it, it's nice because of course it's good for environment. Noise pollution and emission. So it's good.
Thanks, William. So let's get into our podcast. Today we are picking up from our previous episode with cyclist Hakim Owing on climate and mobility. And we're speaking with Felix Muchiri, who is the project manager at Green Hub East Africa. Reading from his social media platforms, Felix believes that in an ever-changing world, gains in efficiency and switching to less carbon-intensive modes of energy generation and transport will need to be adopted. Convince me, Felix, to buy an electric motorcycle. Me, in
yes.
Uganda.
Yes.
Why should I buy it?
Okay, when you come to me taking an electric motorcycle, the thing you realize is just the savings, okay? So I'm going to have a talk with you. Let's think about this. If you had a petrol boda, okay, the most common one, 100cc, and let's be generous and say it consumes 1 liter. For every 1 liter, it goes 50 kilometers. If you do that math, it means for every 1 kilometer, you'll be spending 100 shillings, okay? 100 shillings for every kilometer. On petrol. That's number one.
These are 100 Ugandan shillings.
For every kilometer. So that's easy. Where you typically check how many kilometers you travel in a day. You just multiply it by 100. It gives you the amount you spend on fuel. Of course, it varies, but that's just a base point. So assuming you're doing 100 kilometers every day, so on fuel, that will be 10,000. If I sell you an electric motorcycle, number one, the cost per kilometer, when you compare with that, when you do the same math, how much you would pay to Umeme to access the electricity, it's about 29 shillings. So you'll be spending 29 shillings for every kilometer. Now you take 29, you multiply by 100. Okay? So the same distance that you'd have used 10,000 on your electric, on your petrol bike, you'll be using almost 3,000. So it's a savings of almost 70%. That is one. Number one, that is a savings. That is the biggest advantage that anyone switching from an ICE will see on day one. That's a saving you'll see on day one. Number two, the maintenance cost. Regular boda boda riders, they have to do a lot of maintenance on the bike since it's burning fuel. You have to check things such as your clutch, it's there. You need to check on your spark plugs. You need to buy oil almost every month because it's also, as the bike ages, it gets even worse. Now, for the electric bike, there aren't that many moving parts. So the spending on maintenance, it's negligible. Yeah, so that's number two. Those are the two biggest selling points when it comes to cost. Number three is the freedom you get. Now imagine this, and this is something you get from our riders. The convenience and the knowledge and the freedom of knowing you'd never have to visit a petrol station again. Okay? As long as you have electricity at your home, as long as you have somewhere you can access a charger.
When we have a fuel shortage.
Yes.
I'm safe.
Yeah, exactly. When there's a fuel shortage, you are safe. And the fact that not only is it cheaper, but it also gives you that you'll be passing petrol stations while smiling.
How many Boda Boda riders have you convinced?
So far, I'll speak of we are supply constrained as of now. So right now we have about 40 riders. Okay, this is 2025, and we need to speak more about Green Hub and what Green Hub
is. I'm coming to Green Hub.
Yes. So we have about 40, but we have a backlog of people who want to make their orders. But unfortunately, we don't have bikes we can sell right now.
Do you ride a motorbike?
Yeah, I have one right now.
Is that how you came?
Yeah, that's how I came.
It's downstairs
somewhere. Yeah.
An electric motorbike?
An electric motorcycle.
What is it like riding in Kampala?
It requires, I have to say, I'm coming from Nairobi, so I thought I have all the experience I needed. but I came to Kampala and, one, the number of motorcycles is just, as a proportion to the population, I think within Kampala is just higher than in Nairobi. Because in Nairobi, you don't get, motorcycles within the city center, at least a very limited number of those. And then here it's like the main mode of transport if you want to get somewhere fast. So there are just so many of them. So initially, before you get used to it, it's a bit intimidating because I'm at a stoplight, I've stopped, and everyone behind me, the motorcycle, is just hooting and telling me to move out there because they don't know, I don't understand. Some of Uganda, and I'm like, English, and they're like, move! Like, but there's a red light, you know? Yeah, so there's that. It's a bit scary when you get here. But soon enough, I think you get used to it. As long as you understand how things are moving. It took me about a month or two just to get used to it. Yeah, but it's pretty hectic. You see people without helmets. You also see someone carrying up to four people. So, yeah, okay. There's always something new to observe. Yeah.
Felix, I'm afraid to ask this question, but let me just ask it.
Yes.
How much is an electric?
An electric motorcycle. So that answer is a bit long. It's just like a car. So it depends with what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So how I'll answer this, I'll answer it number one as how we do it at Green Hub, and also perhaps talk about some of the competition and options that are out there. So there are two ways of selling an electric motorcycle. You can go one way. I sell you the bike and the battery with a charger. That's how Green Hub we do it. I sell you the bike with a battery and a charger. You can charge at home, you can charge at our charging stations. That's the Green Hub way of doing it. The problem with that is that the bike is expensive. The bike end up costing about $2,000 to $2,500, which is about $8 million, all the way to around $12 million. So the average Boda Boda rider who's used to paying $5 million, $6 million for a bike looks
or
at,
even less.
Yeah, or even less. Now I'm talking about a new unit for now. Okay. Yeah. So they look at that and it becomes prohibitively very expensive. So the second way of selling it is taking out the most expensive component and leasing it out for fewer, for a cost that is lower than what you'd pay for petrol. So when you look at other companies, you've heard of, I'm not sure how well you know the companies that are doing electric in Uganda.
Not at all.
Yes, in Uganda, in Kenya, you have someone like Zembo. Take Zembo, for example. They'll sell you the bike, the electric motorcycle, for, let's say, 5 million, okay? Then they'll give you the option of leasing the battery, okay, where you pay a lease daily, which should be less than how much you'd have spent on fuel. So therefore, it becomes affordable for the average rider. Because if they pay 5 million for the bike, and then they'll be paying, because the same thing they do on their petrol bikes, they'll be doing on the electric. It's an analogy of your gas. You see that gas cylinder? It's in your house, but technically, it's the gas that is inside that is actually yours. The cylinder itself, once it's empty, you go exchange it at your regular petrol station or your gas cylinder distributor. Same thing with this case of the battery, where you're using the energy inside the battery. Once it is depleted, you go to a swapping station, and you swap that battery.
So what inspired all of this?
What inspired this is, number one, the whole looking at the climate issue. So, number one, the vehicles that we have currently, they are sky blue. And their vision for the company is clear skies in Kampala. So our first vision is to ensure that, number one, the polluting petrol vehicles, we want to get to a point where we never see those ones again, the petrol bikes, okay? But we want to do it in a sustainable way. So if you see a blue scooter out there, just know that is one of the things that it's contributing towards, and that is why it's blue. It looks just like the sky. We envision a time when the skies in Kampala will just be blue. I don't know if you remember the time of the pandemic and it was a bit silent.
Clean.
It was so clean. Yeah. Imagine having that every day. So
I think that there's a time when we had a lot of people on social media talking about there's a gray sky. It felt like there was, you know, so much dust in the air, or
yes,
people were confused about what that was. So that's what you're making me think about.
Yeah. So that's what we are. And just below that gray sky, just above that gray sky, is a beautiful blue sky, right? So we just need to get rid of that smog and dust. And Green Hub is we are looking into doing that one step at a time. We have another program with Women on Wheels. There's a company that's called Women on Wheels.
That's the one that excites me.
Yeah. So for them, they do the recruitment. They do the recruitment of riders. Initially, when we started, it was targeted specifically for women because it is a scooter and it is different. And we wanted, like, the question you are asking is, if it takes a regular lady, like she's been working elsewhere, I give her what she needs in terms of I give her training, I give her an electric motorcycle, I give her a phone to be using, I train her to use all these tools, will she be able to adapt to an entirely male-dominated industry? And the answer has been yes. So so how we've done this, the next partner we have is two other partners. We have Safe Border and we have Global. So Safe Border does the training. Safe Border, we use training facilities at Safe Border. And then once the ladies graduate, they are issued with those the helmets and those safety jackets from Safe Border. Yeah, at the same time with Global, once the ladies have graduated, they're also given those things by Global. They've been generous enough. And then they start working. And the fact that so far we've been able to keep them for so long shows that the answer is actually yes.
How many are they?
It's a male-dominated. So right now we have out of the, we have 24.
24 women?
No, 16 off-head, plus. Yeah.
Might you know any of their stories in your head that you can share with us that shows this picture that you're painting?
Yeah. Actually, I can think of two.
Okay.
We had one lady who was going through a very nasty divorce, okay, with her husband, and been in and out of courts for so long. And one of the arguments that was being made is that the children now need to go with the husband because for her she's not financially able to support the kids, and so she was making the case, no, actually I can. So when we brought her to the Green Hub project, she was actually able to show, because you see, at the same time when you're trying to get custody of your children, you need to show that you have the...
You can provide for them.
Yeah, you can provide for them. So for her, she says that bike gave her the freedom she needed, and she was able to finalize her divorce and also keep custody of her children. So I'd say that is a win I'm usually very proud of, because you see, when you are just recruiting, you never know what people are actually going through, right?
Yeah. It makes a difference when you know their story.
Yeah. When you know their story and you hear the inspiration of someone who's actually in the dust, and you've actually given them an opportunity. Well, you didn't even know. You only hear about this story once she started working, and she's telling us now the good news when we are looking for the stories of some. And then there are also those who are number one living in who are earning less than 100,000 in the entire month.
And border riders?
No, they weren't border riders. So, like I said, we had a different approach.
Okay.
Yeah. So that for the goal of, can we recruit someone who's not been in the border industry? They don't have a border license. They don't have the experience. But what we will do is give them all that. So I forgot to mention one of our biggest benefactors is actually the Danish Embassy through the Danida project. They were kind enough to sponsor these ladies. They sponsored the training. They also sponsored them to get the permits.
When you talk about a woman that's now able to take care of her children from this business, mm-hmm. it's making me wonder about the average daily financial returns for them, typically. Yeah.
So in terms of earnings, I think we have seen people on Glovo who are earning at least 200,000 per week. So when you multiply that to about 4 weeks, you're seeing earnings of about 800,000 to 1 million. And remember that, number one, they're not paying anything in petrol costs, right? Because that is covered under the green hub cost. So by the end of the day, just on the revenue side, you're seeing people who are making up to 1 million. And that is rather encouraging for someone who wasn't earning much.
Are you seeing any particular challenges for women?
Yeah,
are specific to them.
Yeah. There are problems that are very specific women, and some of them are they are both societal. And the biggest societal one we had initially when we were starting off is rejection, especially when you are doing the border. You find that there are those customers who've ordered a safe border, and the minute they pick and they hear it's a female voice, they just cancel. Without even telling them why they're canceling. I'm canceling you just because you're a woman. And can be discouraging, especially if you're just starting off. You still haven't fully understood.
It's really sad. I would take a female border rider any day.
No, you'd think so. So we went into this thinking. I have to say it's a bit sad, but the experience you're getting from them is that they get rejected more by other women and girls than the rejection is definitely the first part. So some of them actually prefer not to take the call, but just text. Yeah, I'll come for you. When the person tried to call, I'm like, I can't talk, let me just come. And then she arrives there and she's like, okay, just take the ride. This is one of our riders, and I was really impressed with her. She says she doesn't pick calls, she texts back such that they don't hear her voice. And when she gets there, she's like, okay, I'm your ride. I know you're afraid, but here's the case. I'll drive you, and when we get to the destination, you decide if you pay me or not. And yeah, so far no one has ever refused to pay. You know, it's such a daring, because now you have to ask yourself, it's either a free ride or with this woman. So that's one of the ways they've been able. But now, because we've pushed so much, people are actually used to them, so it's no longer a big deal. But when we were starting off, that was the biggest one.
Oh, William, please come closer to the microphone. I have a question for you. William, in all honesty, would you cancel the call if a woman rider picked up?
No.
Are you sure?
No.
You have to think about it.
Why?
No. Because what I know, women are so much careful. So I'm sure that they will, when I get on that bike, I'll reach very well than men, because men, they are always on rush sometimes, and they don't, follow the rules of the road. But women, for sure, just see them at home, just see them everywhere. at least than men.
They'll follow rules.
Yes, they follow rules.
Okay, thanks, William.
Actually, to add on that, that's something we've also seen a lot of feedback for. So most people who end up taking those rides, you see those comments on Twitter, like today I took a woman rider and it was so, number one, the vehicle is very silent, so there is that, there is no vibration. So the appeal of the vehicle itself is number one, and also the truth, the driver themselves, that positive feedback as he's giving. We've actually seen that on our own end. The women tend to have less accidents, less police incidents, because you rarely find them like passing the wrong side of the road.
Yeah.
You always see it's the guys who are doing that. So if someone is getting arrested, it's most probably a guy. And that's just the thing. I think they're a safer driver from that point of view. And people who are used to them, actually, that's the feedback they give. But even if you've never tried, you might think, she might not be like competent on the road or something. Yeah, so, yeah, but we're getting there. We're getting there.
I constantly have to remind myself, this conversation is very interesting and I keep forgetting to bring it back to the climate.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
How do your electric motorbikes contribute to reducing carbon emissions and promoting sustainable transportation? Not just in Uganda. Think about Kenya. And where else do you operate?
Just Kenya and Uganda.
Okay.
So from a climate point of view, I think Uganda is actually the best place to be in. From electricity generation point of view, like over 90% of the electricity we have in Uganda is generated from renewable sources. Mainly, we thank God for the Nile. Yeah, you know. So
let's be kind to it.
Yeah. Let's be kind to it. Exactly. And so we have a lot of generation. So number one, the fact that you don't have any tailpipe emission means you reduce the, you have basically eliminated any tailpipe emission from moving from electric, petrol to electric. Remember, the bikes we get in Africa, they're not sold anywhere else. Like the Boxer you see here in Kampala, it's very specific to Africa. And the reason that is the case is that we have lax rules when it comes to emissions. The vehicles, the motorcycles that we have, a regular border, still use 1980s and 1970s technology, which is just a carburetor, and the problem with and no control for emissions. Okay, so these vehicles, not only do they produce very high CO2 emission per kilometer per unit of petrol burned, because of that technology I'm saying, it's very fuel inefficient. And number two, we also have, because it runs hot, because it's also air-cooled, you also get high NOx emissions. And that's part of the reason they're not sold here. There was some time back in India when there was a crackdown where all those bikes that have that old technology, that don't have new emission, that don't comply to emission standards, they were all taken outside the road. So even right now, when you go to India, you'll never find a Boxer Bajaj 100 that looks exactly like what we have in Africa because of that thing. So that tells you per unit of fuel we burn already, we're producing so much CO2. So changing that from ICE to from petrol burning to electricity means already you have a gain there. And remember I said the point of renewable energy. We have capacity to generate more renewable energy in Uganda as a country. But the question has always become where will that demand come from? If we are to look at it from a point of view, if we are to change every motorcycle in Kampala to electric, that's already enough. That is demand enough that you can say it's equivalent to the whole of Kampala again. So that's very high demand, and that will mean that our generation at our dams, all that demand will be taken by renewable energy. And number one, electricity will be. We'll have a less, you know how much fuel, how much amount we spend in local, in currency, in foreign exchange currency, just buying fuel from other countries, because we don't control the fuel. If there's a problem in the Gulf states, or if there's a problem with the, like wars, etc., our petrol actually spikes.
Yeah.
And once that happens, everything else, like basically
comes to a standstill.
Yeah. So if we can reduce our dependency, on foreign imported fuel, it's actually good for us from an economic point of view, because there'll be more consumption locally, saving us so much in forex, how much you spend in forex. So there's that push from that's the main advantage from a government point of view. Then, as I said, also the environmental advantages, the trickle down.
Tailpipe emissions.
Yeah, tailpipe emissions. And then number two, even from like that is air pollution, but there is also the other aspect of noise pollution. Okay, so motorcycles are really loud. So you don't know if you sat next to like a place where there are like 100 motorcycles waiting for the light to turn green, and you hear
Ginger Road.
Yes, exactly.
But there are those ones, and then there are just these ones that have. What they call it, the ones where some random guy has that one particular bike.
With some loud exhaust. Yes. Yeah. So with electric, you'll never have that. So that is the other thing I was talking about. You have reduced noise emission because effectively the only noise you'll be getting is the whine of the motorcycle itself, the motor itself, and the wind noise when the vehicle is moving.
Now I'm thinking about the health benefits that would come with this.
Yes. So the health benefits, number one, immediate one. So you have reduced, with the reduced NOx and particulate emissions from moving from the petrol ones to electric, the immediate benefit for like us who live within the city is, number one, there'll be less pollution, and less pollution means I'll probably live to almost be as old as my grandfather. So I can't...
I'm doing other things right.
Yeah, you're doing.
But yes, I've heard of a number of people who've... The doctor's advice has been you need to go up country and just get some fresh air.
Yes, move out of the city. It's mostly because, and also you're seeing the same even in children. Now you have children who have, the asthma rates in children are higher than what they were like 20, 30 years ago. So those are just some of the problems that are brought about by having so many vehicles, so many carbon burning vehicles within the city. And yeah, just moving directly from that to electric will at least reduce by that. I don't know the exact percentage. I'm sure like company like GAZ has probably done that math. Yeah, but definitely that's something that has been seen. Just to give an example, when India moved from those vehicles, when they mandated that every new vehicle comes with that, within those new standards of emissions, there's actually some reduction in the smog within their cities because they have very big cities. They have a motorcycle density that is even higher than what we have here. So just moving from a more polluting bike to a less polluting bike, the effects were seen from a city point of view. So now imagine moving from that to clearing it entirely. So you'll be seeing what we saw during the pandemic when they were not moving around.
Thank you, Felix, for sharing these incredible insights about, you know, your journey and also Green Hub East Africa's approach to sustainable transportation. I think it's very inspiring to see and hear. William, how are you feeling about all of this?
I just wanted to ask, we are in a noisy environment.
Yes.
So, and these bikes, they don't produce any noise.
Yeah.
One time I was walking on the road and then this bike came and it almost knocked me. I didn't actually realize that it was here because for us we're used over, you know. So how are you going to deal with that?
Yeah, actually, number one, that's one of the things we tell our riders when we are doing the training. Be aware that the average person in Kampala knows a bike is approaching by the noise he hears from the behind. And you have an electric bicycle, you have an electric motorcycle that's very silent. So number one, you need to be very vigilant. In this day and age where everyone is using their phones, people are not like aware you are there. So they know. If it's been behind you, you'll hear noise, you'll hear a horn. But at the same time, we don't want to startle you. So I'll only use the horn if I think you're coming into my way. So far, we've not had any incidences at least reported. Because I think that you usually take care of it when you are doing the initial training. However, in future, such as in developed countries, we have things such as simulated noise vehicle. There are vehicles which have some noise that mandated by the government. It needs to be a certain decibel. Because once we get to a point where we have like all the vehicles are electric and we're used to the audible cue to tell us that there's danger, then it makes sense to introduce such a thing. But for now, it's not there.
You have a near incident here, but I'm actually thinking about it and realizing that we're not seeing anything telling us that there are silent motorbikes around.
Yeah.
So be careful how you're driving or watch out or something. We're set in our way.
Yeah. And I think They are what you call when a technology is new. There are those problems you are not foreseen or problems that you just have to deal with. Unfortunately, now with this, we can't put noise into the vehicle as yet. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Felix.
Yeah, just right. Have to work around it.
William, let's be careful on the road.
Yeah.
And thank you to our listeners. If you want to learn more about Green Hub East Africa or explore how you can be part of this green revolution, where do they find you?
Yes, we are in the socials. You can find us on LinkedIn, so Green Hub East Africa Limited on LinkedIn. We're also on Facebook, Green Hub East Africa, and LinkedIn as well. Instagram, I mean. And I think very soon TikTok, perhaps.
Okay.
And we'll also share our contacts, our emails. I'll leave that with you, and then you can share it with the listeners.
All right. Thank you so much, Felix. Once again, this has been really, really eye-opening for me. And again, to our listeners, thank you. Please don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and share it with your friends. For Climate Talk Uganda, I'm Josephine Karunji, and
William Sachiwamba.